The ethics of science and discovery long have been an inspiration for science fiction, mythology, and horror films alike. Recently, scientists have engineered mice with brains that genetically are part human at the Center for Translational Neuromedicine at the University of Copenhagen and the University of Rochester in the pursuit of studying diseases of the brain and central nervous system. It's a bold step forward. It sounds like the prologue, though, to many different science fiction and horror films. Here to talk to us about these chimeras is Professor Robert Sparrow, a bioethics specialist and lecturer from Monash University. Robert, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us on the program this morning. To start things off, are these mice still mice, or have they become something new, something else entirely?
Look, they've certainly become something that we should take seriously and worry about whether they've become something different entirely. You know, they're not ordinary mice. I don't think they're people yet either.
Well, ethically speaking, what are the arguments for and against this kind of tampering with the laws of nature, such as it were?
Look, medical research and medicine is always tampering with the laws of nature. So that's a phrase we want to use with some caution. Again, I do think there are cases where we should take the distinction between species seriously, but that, you know, this is unnatural. So is most of the human environment nowadays. You've got to look at a couple of things here. You've got to be aware of the possibility that this might bring about improved scientific understanding of matters that are important to people's health and well-being. I mean, maybe this will eventually lead to better drug treatments for cognitive disorders, which would be great. You've got to take the animal suffering involved seriously. These animals always end up being euthanized or killed. They are not living in their natural environments, and they're often quite stressed and distressed because of that. Both those things are true of ordinary medical research involving animals. And then you have to start thinking about the difference between, you know, the human animal and non-human animals, and at what point you might say this is like experimenting on a human fetus or on a human child or on someone with a severe cognitive impairment. To be frank, in this experiment, we're a long way from that. But, you know, once scientists can do this, they'll be tempted to introduce more and more neural material into animal models. And at some point, we're going to start to feel pretty uneasy that this looks like a version of human experimentation.
Well, certainly, I mean, lab mice have been used in experiments like this for years in the discoveries surrounding medicine and other bits and pieces of technology. And we do tend to get a little bit warier, I guess, as we get higher and higher on the, this mythical animal spectrum. You know, we might treat mice a certain way, and we might treat dogs a certain way. We certainly treat chimps a different way again. And certainly one argument I saw raised not terribly long ago was, what if we could clone Neanderthal humans? You know, they're not technically the humans of today, but would it be ethically okay for us to clone Neanderthals and treat them as something inhuman? So it really is, do we have an idea of what that tipping point is?
Well, we have two ideas, and they tend to be incompatible. So, you know, in one framing, we simply look at an organism and say, has it got human DNA? You know, is it even if it's a child born with very severe brain damage, so that child is never going to live without medical assistance or perhaps have any conscious experiences? Even many people think that that's, nevertheless, we shouldn't be experimenting on individuals in those circumstances, and we should treat them as part of our moral community. There's another perspective that says, let's not look at what something's made of, let's look at what it can do, and if it can suffer, and if it has hopes and dreams, and if it has, you know, loves its kids, then we should take it seriously. And that will exclude some human beings, classically, but it will also, interestingly, include many non-human animals. So those are two different frameworks. What's interesting about these sorts of experiments, or perhaps the sort of recreating Neanderthals through some sort of cloning process, you know, to be frank, that would be problematic for all sorts of other reasons, because someone would have to get pregnant to an embryo that would produce a Neanderthal pregnancy. It's hard to imagine that ending happily in most cases. So there's all sorts of other things you might worry about that. But certainly, you know, were one to encounter a Neanderthal today, the fact that they're not the same species at us, I'm inclined to say, shouldn't matter, because they are moral persons. They're people who care about their lives, who suffer, and who have desires. But I also think that applies to many non-human animals today. And so, you know, ordinary medical research involving animals and indeed eating meat should be much more morally problematic than most people realize. I mean, it is important to think those things go together. If you are willing to eat, you know, pigs and sheep and cows, then it's going to be pretty hard to complain about medical research because you can have a healthy vegetarian diet. Some of this medical research might actually save people's lives. That seems more important. So for people who aren't vegetarians, in a sense, this issue should be easy. I'm happy to eat pigs because they're tasty, so I should let scientists experiment on animals because it satisfies their desires. For people who are thinking seriously about not wanting to cause sentient creatures suffering, the medical research will be more on the nose, but so too will our ordinary diets.
Well, just finally, when we look at these kind of conundrums, I mean, you're looking in the field of bioethics and obviously have some much far greater understanding than I, a layperson. But we look at these kind of conundrums. The now the one that sort of springs to mind is maybe not cloning a Neanderthal, but cloning a modern human being. And obviously there was you know, a great deal of countries, once the technology looked like it might be possible, put down a great big sort of no on that. No, we're not having cloned human beings. Not that's not happening. That would be unethical. When you look at sort of the experiments going on here, do we see in some ways the technology outstripping the ethical arguments? And in some cases, in the ethical arguments, do we see a very knee-jerk reaction without much consideration over the hows, the whys, and who's going to be affected?
Look, you're never going to get a philosopher and a professional bioethicist to say that we don't need to consider these things more clearly. You know, I think it's very important that we think about these issues deeply. It has to be said that often the sort of research community prohibits the things that they think they can't do, and then the moment that they can do, they decide to reconsider and say, no, actually, that would be okay. We've just seen a very interesting example with the leading British sort of semi-government bioethics consultancy called the Nuffield Council has just come out and said there would be nothing wrong with genetically enhancing human beings. This is a line that for decades everyone has said, no, we'd never do that. You know, that's a step too far. But of course, previously we couldn't really do that. There is now a sort of more realistic, still a theoretical possibility that you could genetically modify human beings effectively. And now we're seeing people start to back away from prohibitions that they once, you know, thought were sort of firmly drawn. Similar thing is true with cloning. I mean, the main thing with human cloning is, one, we can't do what's called somatic cell nuclear transfer cloning. You can actually do a thing called embryo splitting, which artificially creates identical twins, and people do that. They do that in the context of IVF in some places around the world. So the line against, you know, the prohibition on cloning is a sort of public statement against something that people can't do yet. And I think that if, researchers discovered that they could do it and find a market for it, we might see people backing away from that. So certainly I think we should be talking more seriously about this stuff as a society. We should be thinking, what kind of world do we want to live in the future? And is it a world in which, when we encounter an animal, we don't know what properties it has because it's come out of some laboratory? And is it a world in which we encounter people and some people have not just, advantages because they're born to wealthy parents, but advantages because their wealthy parents cloned them or genetically modified them?
Well, in all honesty, Robert, I could get right into the transhumanist debate with you right now, but I think maybe we'll leave that for another day. We'd love to have you back on at some point. Do appreciate your time this morning, though.
Thanks for taking the time to talk about these issues.
Absolutely. That was Professor Robert Sparrow, a bioethics specialist and lecturer from Monash University, speaking to us about chimeras and the ethics of chimeras in this particular case of a laboratory experiment inserting sort of human brain cells, creating human cells, genetic cells in lab mice in order to test certain kinds of diseases, where the line actually is between mouse and man. I'd say I was going to write a book on it, but actually, just funnily enough, only last week, I was reading a collection of short stories by Dean Koontz called Strange Highways, and it actually has this exact scenario covered in one of the stories called Trapped. Dean Koontz, if you're a bit of a Dean Koontz fan, you haven't read that one, I would recommend picking it up. Skip Twilight of the Dawn. It's a little bit rubbish, but the rest of the stories in that collection, including Trapped, very, very interesting, very, very good stuff. And like I say, does cover that one quite well, I would have thought.